Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Four security officials have been killed, five wounded as suicide bombers struck across Saudi Arabia, detonating explosives in the holy city Medina, at one of Islam's holiest sites, the Prophet's Mosque, as well as the eastern city Qatif and near the U.S. consulate in Jeddah. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but Islamic State has carried out a series of bombing and shooting attacks in the kingdom in the past 2 years. Amin Saikal is a regional analyst at Australia National University.
The Islamic State itself is dominated by Sunni extremists, and the Prophet Muhammad is, of course, the leader of the not only Sunni Islam, but Islam as a whole. And any heinous acts against the site can only damage the Islamic State more than it has already been, particularly in the eyes of the Muslims across the world.
No foreigners were wounded in Monday's blasts, which occurred as the holy month of Ramadan drew to a close. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited Uganda Monday at the start of a four-country tour to boost trade and security ties.
The historic summit that will be held later today between the leaders of seven African countries and Israel testifies to the dramatic changes taking place in the relationship between Israel and Africa. Africa is a continent on the rise. Israel looks forward to strengthening ties with all its countries.
Monday also marked the 40th anniversary of the Israeli commando raid at Uganda's main airport in 1976 to rescue Israelis taken captive by Palestinian and German hijackers. The raid, which freed over 100 hostages, resulted in the death of Mr. Netanyahu's brother, who led the raid on Entebbe. This is VOA News. In northern Syria, U.S.-backed Kurdish and Arab fighters repelled another major Islamic State counteroffensive in the defense of the town Manbij. The Syrian Democratic Forces, which launched its campaign to take the IS-defended town near the Turkish border, has fought its way into part of Manbij but has been repeatedly attacked by suicide bombers. European leaders gave assurances to Balkan nations Monday that Britain's vote to leave the European Union will not stop plans to enlarge the bloc. French President François Hollande and German Chancellor Angela Merkel told a Balkan summit in Paris Monday they're determined to continue talks with Balkan nations aspiring to join the EU. Six Balkan states, Serbia, Montenegro, Macedonia, Bosnia, Kosovo, and Albania, are in various stages of joining the bloc. Tihomir Orešković, Croatia's prime minister, was also on hand and spoke of the key issues involved.
Clearly, the migration challenge is something that we're dealing through or are dealing with, both in terms of the Western Balkans and Europe in general. And then terrorism, obviously. Look at the recent terrorist attack in Istanbul, which is the most recent, but other European cities. And then the third topic, which probably is the most relevant in light of the recent Brexit announcement, is to make sure that the further integration of the Western Balkans proceeds. And I think that was the key message.
While the majority of voters in Britain were concerned about the EU's influence over Britain's national sovereignty, many people in the Balkans see joining the EU as a way to boost their country's economies and bring stability to a region that experienced conflict in the 1990s. The head of Britain's United Kingdom Independence Party, UKIP, has resigned his post. Nigel Farage, Monday, said the June 23rd referendum won by those wishing to leave the EU means his political ambition of an independent Britain after more than 40 years of affiliation has been achieved. Investigators are questioning some of the hostages rescued from Saturday morning's attack on an upscale restaurant in Bangladeshi capital Dhaka that left 20 patrons and two police officers dead. Police also said two men, including a suspected militant, are being interrogated. Police in Zimbabwe used tear gas to break up a protest by taxi drivers over police harassment. The demonstration came ahead of a planned strike Tuesday by state hospital doctors and other government workers over past due salary payments. Nigeria's oil minister, Emmanuel Ibe Kachiku, has been replaced by President Muhammadu Buhari as he attempts to deal with allegations of corruption as the country's oil sector reels from falling prices, militant attacks, and billions in missing funds. The U.S. space agency NASA marked significant achievement Tuesday, successfully putting the Juno spacecraft Juno into elliptical orbit around the planet Jupiter in a mission to explore the solar system's largest planet. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe police fired tear gas and water cannons on Monday to disperse protesting minibus drivers.
Those that are demonstrating are doing a wonderful job, and we just encourage Zimbabweans to continue and remain to be peaceful. There is no need to be violent, but surely our leaders must also sanitize their thinking.
Stans Vowaza is chairman of vendors in central Harare. Protesters demand an end to extrajudicial killings by Kenyan police. A debate over sexism rekindles in Ghana, and Malawi marks 52nd independence anniversary tomorrow, Wednesday.
We are the blessed nation, despite that going a number of challenges, but it is the same as the Israelites. We are the chosen people, but they were going through a number of challenges as well.
Patricia Kaliati is Malawi's Minister of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare. A local South Sudan soap company is hiring women as a way of empowering them. And the UN calls for a humane and responsible treatment of refugees. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Police in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, on Monday fired tear gas, water cannons, and warning shots at minibus drivers and others protesting alleged police harassment. The protesters claim they are losing a lot of money at police roadblocks, which they say have become money spinners for some police allegedly demanding bribes. Erwin Chifera has details.
The riots in Epworth, Rua, Zimri Park and Dama Falls quickly spread to other parts of the city, resulting in running battles between the police and members of the public. Commuter omnibus drivers said they are losing at least $50 a day after being ticketed by the police, who also allegedly demand bribes. Hundreds of people and school children were left stranded, and anti-riot police responded by moving into the affected areas with water cannons and fired tear gas to disperse the marauding demonstrators. Several people, including two police officers, were injured. Businessman and community leader in Epworth, Nelson Masiwa, who tried to negotiate with the residents, and police said the situation went out of control because the youths are just frustrated.
The cops, they've done all they could do. They actually even went to negotiate with them so that people would disperse, but they refused to disperse. And then at the end of the day, these are unemployed youths, and a lot of ills are happening and everything else. And actually, they don't have anything to do. You are giving them a show as we speak right now. But it's not even a political item. It's not even related to anything. It's just people who are frustrated with how the combis are moving. That's what started this whole thing.
In central Harare, vendors led by their chairperson, Stans Vowaza, demonstrated against President Robert Mugabe's rule and abuse of public funds by his government.
Those that are demonstrating are doing a wonderful job, and we just encourage Zimbabweans to continue and remain to be peaceful so that the process becomes very peaceful. There is no need to be violent, but surely our leaders must also sanitize their thinking so that we all do one thing together as we move along.
Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Chet Charamba, warned those inciting and engaging in violence that they will be dealt with severely. She told a media briefing that police had been deployed in most parts of the city to deal with any public disorder.
Causing mayhem by taking the law into your own hands is not condoned. As police, we have information and intelligence on the identities of some criminal elements who are behind the social unrest. We've put our monitoring teams in place, and all perpetrators of violence will be arrested.
Charamba said though they've reduced the number of roadblocks on the country's roads, security roadblocks will remain, as in their own ways, the situation is tense. But despite Charamba's warnings, indications are that combi operators from suburbs like Budiriro, Mufakos and Kwazana have joined the protests. There were also protests in Marondera and Bindura, while operators and residents in other towns and cities are expected to join the protests tomorrow. Government workers who have not received their June salaries are set to go on strike tomorrow. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chipera.
The killing of a human rights lawyer and two other men brought hundreds to the streets of Nairobi on Monday to protest what they call police death squads that killed those who challenged the government. The police chief says the three police officers arrested in the case are rogues and rejects the claim of death squads. VOA's Jill Craig filed this report from the scene of the protests.
Here in Nairobi, a few hundred human rights activists have gathered to march and protest the deaths of Willie Kimani, a human rights lawyer, his client, Joseph Atmawinda, a motorcycle taxi operator, and Joseph Maruri, their taxi driver. The three men disappeared on June 23rd, following a court hearing in which Kimani was defending his client against police charges following a traffic stop gone wrong. The three are believed to have been taken to an administrative police compound. On Friday, the three missing men's bodies were found in a river about 70 kilometers from Nairobi. Boniface Mwangi is a Kenyan human rights activist.
There's been a habit by the Kenyan government when they do not agree with someone or when they have a problem with someone, instead of actually taking them through the proper government channels, they kill them. I think there's also fear among the professionals because in the past they've been killing a poor taxi driver, a suspected gangster or terrorist, but they've gone beyond that and now they're killing professionals for doing their job.
Some of the protesters carried coffins from Uhuru Park to the Supreme Court that say stop extrajudicial killings. Others carry buckets of red paint to symbolize bloodshed. Many of the protesters are wearing T-shirts that say stop police executions. The activists say they've come here for justice, full accountability, and they are demanding the resignation of the Deputy Inspector General of the Administrative Police, as well as the Inspector General of Police. They're also demanding an inquiry into all extrajudicial killings in Kenya. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Malawi's Minister of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare says the country is blessed in spite of some challenges. Patricia Kaliati says Malawians enjoy freedom. This comes as the country celebrates its 52nd independence anniversary from Britain tomorrow, Wednesday. It also comes at a time that the country's Roman Catholic bishops say hunger is a national crisis and call on the government to take steps to provide immediate and long-term solutions. Minister Kaliati says hunger is not unique to Malawi and the country has a lot to be thankful for on this Independence Day.
When we are celebrating the independence itself, for us, being independent since 1964 to now, that's an achievement which we are celebrating ourselves on 6th of July. But now, looking into the theme of committed to patriotism, integrity, and hardworking for a prosperous Malawi with the help of God, this is what we are looking forward to, that we need to be patriotic to our own country. We need to also be integrity as we look into the affairs of everybody and also focusing on the hardworking part of it as we are developing our nation with the help of our Lord. And we thank God. He has been with us for the 52nd anniversary of our independence. It's not easy. We are the blessed nation despite that going a number of challenges. But it is the same as the Israelites. We are the chosen people, but they were going through a number of challenges as well. So we are celebrating that we are the blessed nation comparing to maybe to our friends. We are really independent and we've been with God. We have the freedom. So we'd like to thank God as we are celebrating our independence. And this is the way how we've chosen to celebrate our day.
So what are some of the festivities?
The activities which are going to have is worship, and the number of them where we'll be praising the Lord, we'll be asking Him to be with us, we'll be singing and dancing, thanking the Lord for the life, for the good nation, and also asking Him to be with us as we are looking forward to love our nation, to maintain the integrity as we're looking into the affairs of everybody, and also to promote the hard working among us Malawians so that we make our nation prosper.
I was reading an article about the Catholic bishops saying that hunger is a national crisis in Malawi, calling on the government to take action to tackle this national crisis. What do you make of that?
The hunger is a global problem. It's not a Malawian problem. It's because of the climate change, which is a global thing, and that's why member states, when the NATO and the UN, they decided on having all the sustainable development goals where we are saying we should not leave anyone behind. It means it's not a problem for Malawians. So that the bishops, as much as we appreciate, yes, they are asking us to be patriotic, integrity, as well as hardworking, so that we can count all those.
How do you think Malawi is faring now politically in terms of multi-party democracy?
Good. Malawi is faring good, and that's why you were able to ask us this time.
Still on the bishops, there was an article that said the state spies put Catholic Bishop Ntumbuka, Malawi activist, under surveillance over regime change agenda. Is this true? Is he under surveillance?
On one, in fact, when you are asking us how we are celebrating our independence, issues of regime change, issues of whatever. In fact, you are not asking me to respond on the Archbishop Ntumbuka. Then if you ask me to respond on the Archbishop Ntumbuka, what he said, then you are not doing us good. Remember, we are saying we are committed to patriotism, integrity, hardworking for a prosperous Malawi with the help of God. And for me to be responding what the man of God whom we believe he stands in the shoes of Jesus Christ with your questions, that we've got to march that with our independence, then I'm not going to do good due to the Malawians.
Patricia Kaliati is Malawi's Minister of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare. She will speak with me from the capital, Blantyre. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 5th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Last week, a male member of Ghana's parliament accused the new electoral commission chief, a woman, of trading sexual favors to get her post. The ensuing controversy has rekindled debate over sexism in politics. Francesca Kekra-Fosum has the story from Accra.
Women may hold some of the highest positions in Ghana, including attorney general and foreign affairs minister. But if you think the country doesn't have a gender problem, you may need to think again. The president appointed Charlotte Osei, head of the Electoral Commission, in June 2015. She's the first woman to hold the position. A male lawmaker, Kennedy Ejepon, said in a speech last month to supporters in southern Ghana that Osei gave sex in exchange for her job. His comments have opened the figurative floodgates on the issues of sexism and discrimination. Women have protested in Koforidua in the eastern region and on social media under the hashtag #IAmCharlotte Osei. So do men sleep their way to the top? Wrote one woman on Facebook. Another wrote, "This attitude affects us all. It's time for change." Ursula Owusu Ekufong has been an opposition MP for 8 years. She's no stranger to insults and says she has even been called a prostitute.
I've had a few run-ins with my male colleagues. One of them actually had the nerve to tell me that I am a woman, I should be serving them dinner. Another person also in committee said that, do I think I'm in my kitchen? All statements which reflect the state of mind that many of the male colleagues in parliament also have about the women.
She says she sent a complaint to the Speaker of Parliament about the kitchen comment in 2015. But nothing has come of it. And she says women in government are punished more harshly. In 2013, a deputy communications minister, Victoria Hammer, was sacked after she was recorded in a private conversation allegedly saying she would not quit politics until she made $1 million. Hammer says she hopes her SAR experience does not deter other women out there with political ambitions.
Politics is a tough area to operate, and it's difficult for both men and women. Men also go through their own experience in politics. There are men who were former ministers who had to go to prison for some lack of due diligence. And so if we do not encourage women to go into politics for whatever reason, then we can never achieve equalization. No matter what it is, the struggle is always continuous.
The government insists there's no double standard. Nana Oyeletha is Minister for Gender, Children and Social Protection.
Women are not asking for favors or to be given a carte blanche. The fact that we are female ministers does not mean that we are immune from the code of ethics and from the code of conduct that guides public service.
But prominent women say their treatment reflects the patriarchal nature of the Ghanaian society. Francesca Kakra-Forson for VOA News, Accra.
A local soap producing company in South Sudan is hiring women as a way of empowering them. Tito Justin of US South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
A machine at Junubi Soap Company in Juba foam soap bars out of palm oil and water-based products. This is the first soap-producing company established in South Sudan since the economic crisis began. Junubi sells at least 750 cartons a day of blue and white bars of soap to the locals in Juba. Most of the soap ingredients are imported from Kenya. Sometimes when company managers run out of stock, they use lul oil made locally in South Sudan to produce the soap. It takes three steps to process bars of soap before the product can be packaged and sold. Jacqueline Apath Majong is a lawyer and chief executive officer of the company. Apath says she wants to use the money she has earned to empower South Sudanese women whom she says have suffered so much during the war.
When they have nothing, and especially here in Southern Sudan, the number of widows, there are many who they cannot be able to afford the education to their children. And there is other women also, they are not widows, but they cannot be able to afford the job. They are not educated.
The machine costs $10,000 and produces 500 cartons of soap in 8 hours. The soap is sold wholesale to local retail traders in Juba. Apath says the company also provides capacity building to women since most of her employees did not go to school.
In the soap industry, we are not looking for educated woman. We educate that woman to be educated lady. We show her what to do. We taught her. At the end of the day, they have classes to go. Before 4, if they leave the company, they have to go to classes for 1 hour. Then they'll go. So that you explain knowledge what you have gotten. And we speak with them in English and Arabic so that they can understand.
Asunta Aluel is an employee at the Junubi Soap Company. She says this is her first job. She earns £50 a day and about £1,500 a month. The money Aluel receives is equivalent to monthly salaries of undergraduate employees working in public institutions in South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Aluel says the job has changed her life.
When I was not working, I suffered. Now as I work, I'm fine. You will need to work to help your children at home. If you stay without work, you will not be able to help your children.
The Junubi Soap Company started in 2008 with only limited production. The company is aimed at marketing its product in other states across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
At least 150 heads of state are expected to attend a UN summit on refugees and migrants in September this year in New York. The focus is to get new global commitments to address large movements of refugees and migrants responsibly and humanely. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More people than ever are on the move. The UN Refugee Agency reports 65 million people were forcibly displaced last year. That includes 20 million refugees, with the rest internally displaced. In addition, tens of millions of people fleeing poverty, climate change, or natural disasters are migrating to other countries in search of a better life. The United Nations says individual countries cannot solve problems of mass migration on their own. It says international cooperation is needed to manage refugee and migration flows in a responsible and orderly manner. Special advisor for the September UN summit, Karen Koenig Abu Zaid, agrees the statistics on migration are daunting, but she says it is wrong for countries to view rising migration only as a crisis.
It certainly is a crisis for the families of refugees and migrants sometimes involved, and for the countries that are affected by this displacement, is that it doesn't have to be a crisis if we bring everyone together to work together, all the states and the UN entities and so on.
Because refugees and migrants cross international borders, sometimes multiple borders, Abu Zaid says states have to work together. She says the actions of one state have repercussions for others.
One good recent example, of course, is what Kenya has suggested about sending its refugees back, the ones they've had for three decades, and 200,000 of them in rather squalid conditions. And as soon as they said that, then we began to hear the same sorts of messages from Sudan, from Ethiopia, and elsewhere.
The summit will explore measures for addressing the root causes of displacement and for prosecuting criminal smugglers and traffickers. The United Nations recommends states improve the reception of people on the move and treat those who cross borders in a humane way. To counter the negative tone surrounding refugees and migrants, Abu Zaid says the United Nations will lead a global campaign to conquer xenophobia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owomayi, Etegwene, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Uganda will represent East Africa region at the FIBA Africa Zone 5 Under-18 tournaments following their convincing victories over the visiting Kenyans in Kampala over the weekend. On Sunday, Uganda women edged Kenya 71-62 before the men won 72-59. Early on Saturday, the Ugandan girls outwitted the visitors 81-68 before the men triumphed 80-58. The Boys Africa Under-18 tournament takes place in Kigali, Rwanda later this month, while the girls' event is in Cairo, Egypt in August. Elsewhere, Algeria qualified for the FIBA Men's Under-18 tournament convincingly in their matches against Morocco. Algeria edged Morocco 69-60 in their first match before going on to win 69-44 in the second fixture. Both matches were played in Algiers. Turning to rugby, hosts Tunisia overpowered Ivory Coast 50-5 in the Africa Cup Group B encounter in Monastir on Saturday. Earlier on, Tunisia dismissed Botswana 43-10, while Ivory Coast outwitted Botswana 20-13. Moving on to handball, Tunisia lost 34-22 to France. Denmark edged Angola 28-24. As Spain outwitted Egypt 30-21 at the World Women's Under-20 Handball Championships in Moscow, Russia on Sunday. Finally, in athletics, Kenyan defending champion Kenneth Mungara retained his Gold Coast Marathon title in Australia in a winning time of 2 hours and 9 minutes on Sunday. Ethiopian Chala Tolesa and Kenyan Leah Kiprono were second and third in the women's race. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Etegwini, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, July 5th.
Africa. This is Albert Alagbo from the Department of Public Administration in Akanibom Federal Polytechnic, Nigeria. You will permit me use your medium to congratulate the government and the citizens of the United States of America on this day, 4th July of their Independence Day. I enjoy your unity for 240 years of independence.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. And that is it for this Tuesday, July 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.